Are you ready to elevate your personal or business brand with a professionally self-published book, but you keep getting repeatedly stuck time and time again? If you've been burned by bad advice, my friend, overwhelmed by the fire hose of information, or simply don't know where to turn, listen in for straightforward, actionable publishing guidance without the fluff so you can avoid the biggest and costliest mistakes new authors make. Self-publishing for professionals is your roadmap to becoming a published thought leader. Hey, friends and future authors, this is Lynn Aliquity Smart, just back for another episode of Publishing for Professionals. I hope you guys are having a great summer, and I would love to thank you for listening to today's episode. And our episode today is a book blueprint episode. So I'm super excited to have my guests on today to flip the script and ask me questions about writing and publishing. But before we jump into today's show, I want to give a big welcome back to my returning listeners. Thanks for joining me today. And a big welcome to my new listeners. Please make sure that you like and subscribe and leave a review for Publishing for Professionals on your favorite podcast player. All right, my friends. So today my guest is Bob Martin. Bob Martin's life has never followed a straight line. He is a one-time mob lawyer in Miami turned mindfulness teacher as a professor of wellness. Bob has walked a path that few would imagine. His journey from courtroom to the quiet depth of meditation hall infuses his writing with grit and grace. As an author, Bob weaves together history, spirituality, and lived experience to explore great human questions that we are constantly thinking about in our head. So Bob is moving along the path of self-publishing and is here with us today to ask questions about hybrid publishing and developing his book content. Bob, thank you so much for joining us today. I can't wait to dive into your publishing journey.
Oh, Lynn, thanks. So happy to be here and thanks for having me.
So I have to ask you really quick before we jump into the publishing part. I don't think I've ever had a guest on that was a mob lawyer. Tell me some really crazy experience or something that happened that was like, oh my gosh, when you were a mob lawyer.
I guess one of the questions that comes to people mind the most is how does one become a mob lawyer?
Right.
So I started out working for Janet Reno in the DA's office of Miami-Dade County during the cocaine cowboy days. Those are the days of Scarface, the movie Scarface, and the Medellin boat lift and all that stuff. And I rose up in the office and I was heading up the Economic Crimes Division, and we used a racketeering civil case to hit the mob up for $72 million. And I left the office shortly after that and opened up a small little office down the road from the courtroom. And in walks Johnny. I won't tell you his last name, but I will say that it was the southern branch of the Gambino family. And he walks right past my secretary, sits down in front of me, and we just sat and kind of looked at each other for a while. I knew who he was, of course, and he knew who I was. And finally, he said, you know, you hit us up for a lot of money. And I said, yes, sir. And he said, we've got some pretty good lawyers and you beat them. We want to send you some clients.
Wow.
So I said, okay. But, you know, everybody, then the next question, everybody says, well, weren't you scared or didn't you have, you know, some concerns about it and the like? And what I have to say is that these guys are good for their word. Their word is their bond because, you know, think about it. They can't really go to court to sue people over broken agreements. They have other methods of dealing with that.
Yes, that might involve, so, may or may not involve concrete shoes.
Correct. So we needed to sit down and basically Johnny, he taught me the meaning of integrity, believe it or not, from a mob lawyer. He says, integrity is doing what you say you're going to do or saying that you're not going to do it.
Yes.
So as long as you're straight with me and I'm straight with you. And I said, Johnny, I'm not going to do anything illegal. I'm not going to do anything unethical. And I said, that's in your best interest because you want a lawyer who is trusted by the courts. Mm-hmm. Whose word is good as gold in the courtroom. So I'm never going to, you know, tarnish my reputation. And those are the terms. And he said, I can live with that. And we lived with that for many, many years until Johnny's son was unfortunately arrested with a 15-year mandatory felony. And he came and he said, Bob, you will do these things. And I said, Johnny, I won't do those things. He goes, I really hope that you reconsider your decision. I came to him a couple of weeks later and I said, Johnny, I'm intending to move to North Carolina. And he said, well, Bob, sometimes a man just has to move on. This way we can part friends. And we shook on it and I moved away and never heard from them again. Like I say, they are generally good for their word as long as you're straight with them and there's nothing to worry about. It's the backstabbing and not being, that stuff gets you into trouble.
Yeah. Well, coming from a big Italian family, I know that just within the Italian circles that, yes, being good on your word is huge. Like you break trust with somebody and you're Italian. I mean, you might as well not even be, you're just dead to them. So I truly understand that from that perspective. That's so super interesting. Okay. That was just fascinating. I love that story, Bob. So thank you for sharing with that.
Happy to.
That has nothing to do with book publishing. It's still an interesting story. And books, you know.
Well, it did. Some of these stories did wind up. Yeah, some of these stories did wind up in my first novel. So,
oh, very cool. We're definitely going to talk about that at the end. Okay. So, but now let's flip the script and you get to ask me questions about writing and publishing. So what is your first question that you have, Bob, about writing and publishing?
Okay, well, this one's about writing. It's not about publishing yet. I'm writing a second novel, and this is what I suppose would be marketed as a sweeping historical intergenerational drama.
Okay.
It covers 140 years and three continents. It's the story of a Hungarian man who was born in 1898, came to America through Ellis Island, started a business with popcorn in amusement parks and carnivals, and eventually that was his dream of coming to the American dream. It is the archetypical hero's narrative arc. You know, the hero starts in his home environment and then something happens which thrusts him out of it and he goes on a series of adventures. And at some point, the adversary wins and he's devastated. And then he has to come back and, you know, there's another situation. And generally, if it's a tragedy or a comedy, depending, he either loses or wins at the end of the book. And he always has a mentor and he always has a cheerleader or a sidekick like Sancho Panza, you know, in Man of La Mancha. And there's always a mentor and a sidekick and an adversary. And I've not been creative in varying the formula. This is the typical hero's journey. In this particular story, the adversary winds up being his grandmother, and she does some really mean and nasty things to him.
Wow, that's not a nice grandma.
That's not a nice grandma. And so that is my problem. Now, I can explain why the grandma is so mean and nasty. You know, in a capsule, she was 15 years old, Hungarian royalty, married off to an Italian count at 15 years of age, not a loving relationship, basically ignored, grew up in the Antinori Tuscan, you know, estate, which was more like a prison to her. It didn't live in a loving. And then all of a sudden, this tall, dark and handsome Cecilia comes through and they have this brief affair and she winds up having a bastard kid. And the kid and she are then kind of outcast within the home. So she suffers this indignity over years as her heart begins to harden. But then the child that she actually had, the legitimate daughter she had, is visiting the sister in Hungary often and meets a commoner, a watchmaker, and has an affair with him and has an illegitimate child. So now her own shame and her own suffering is now projected out onto her daughter, and she winds up hating the product, the bastard boy, who is the hero of the story.
Got it.
Okay. I've created a situation where we have enough of an explanation as to why she has interfered with his dream. And he doesn't know this. He gets arrested in Italy when he's 17. One of his stores gets bombed. Another store gets burnt to the ground. And he has no idea it's her until she dies 70, 80 years later. And they find the material and the stuff in the trunk, which gives them the evidence, et cetera. Okay.
Okay.
So here is my problem developmentally. Somewhere along the line, I have to explain why Julia is so mean. why her heart is so hard. And the way that I did it initially was I started with Martin's, well, the disowning of her daughter and the birth of the hero. And then I did a little bit of his early life. And we're talking 1898, 1905, 1910. Then all of a sudden I shifted in time to 1960s New Jersey, where Julia is now an older woman and she gets a letter from Tuscany. And then I give the whole backstory in like chapter 4.
Okay.
And then I go back to Martin's story. And all of my better readers, all the people that have read it so far said that's it. I almost put the book down as I was so engrossed and I was so engaged in Martin's story that when it went off on this whole backstory and everything, first of all, I shook my head and said, how did we jump that many years? Mm-hmm. And then I got this whole other story of somebody and I said, who is this book about? And I almost put the book down. And so nobody liked that. So now I'm trying to figure out, how can I do this? Can I take little pieces of her backstory and try to weave it in, you know, throughout the book where, but I really, my writer's heart wants me to have a big reveal when they open the trunk and he discovers this stuff. So the question is,
so what was the part that the beta readers almost put down the book is because they didn't, they thought that like there was too much of the grandmother's story in the story.
It was too big a jump and they liked the progression of Martin's story so much. They didn't like it when I broke away.
Oh,
they just didn't.
You.
It was a break in their consciousness. Yeah. They were into the story and they wanted to know more about it. Now, all of a sudden, you know, for one chapter, I break into something completely different and they just felt they didn't like it.
I understand what you're saying. So one of the things you could do, and there's a book that you can read that exemplifies this really well, and it's called All the Water in the World. It's a fiction book and it's an apocalyptic book. But if you don't like apocalyptic, she writes in this way. So one of the things, what you can do instead of just jumping into her grandmother's story is keep telling his story, but then interject little pieces of the grandmother's backstory along the way as you're continuing to tell his story. That way the reader's still on track with his story, but they're getting the little bits and pieces and information as they need it, right? So they don't have to have grandmother's whole story. They just need the parts of her story that are relevant so they understand what he's going through and what's happening. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, although the doing of it is, I would say, so hard that it's almost over my pay grade.
Yeah.
I mean, to weave it in like that is just, every time I try to weave a little piece of it in, I say, oh, this would be a good place to put that piece in. The piece just doesn't feel right standing alone outside of the context of her story.
Okay.
And I'm just having a heck of a time trying to figure out.
Yeah. And that could be something we could talk about, like with book coaching or whatever. That's something I typically help people with. But yeah, but I say finding a way to weave bits of her story in as you go along. Or the other thing I just thought of too, you could do is start with the backstory of the grandmother having the baby and something like that, and then jump into his story. So you could do that too. So there's a few different options because you said it's historical fiction, correct?
Right, right.
Okay. So you don't have to worry about, it's not like a real memoir. So you don't have to worry a lot about like exactly how true something is, except for the fact that like it has to take the reader on a journey. So you can't keep switching up. But there's a couple different ways you can do that. Actually, there is a podcast that's out and it's called Fiction Writers Toolkit. So I would definitely recommend that you check out that podcast because that's also going to have some ideas for you. And then there's a YouTuber. Her name is Alyssa Matesik. And I can also send you these after the episode. Mm-hmm. She has really great ideas for fiction writers as well, because fiction is not specifically my specialty, even though I write it for myself personally. But those are the two things I would recommend for that.
Do you know, I was playing around with the idea because, you know, it's funny. I was at the end. And I have something which is almost like an epilogue. And I was thinking, you don't really have an epilogue without a prologue. And I was thinking, maybe, do you think that I could fit her story in as a prologue? And so you get the whole thing as a prologue where, if I'm not mistaken, in a prologue, you can really show, not tell. I mean, tell, not show. You can really just tell the story without having to show so much. Just tell the story, her backstory, and then boom, go into the guy's birth.
Yeah, I was gonna say, when you said prologue, that was the first thing I thought of. You could put the grandma's story in the prologue, as long as it's not like, you don't want to get 10-page prologue. But if you could get her story in like 3 or 4 pages, that could definitely be an option for you. Yeah, that would totally make sense. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah, no, I think I could do it in 3 or 4 pages. Okay. I mean, I really think I could.
All right, friends, we're going to take a quick break right here. When we come back, Bob's got some more questions for me that I'm going to answer for him on this book blueprint episode.
Are you looking for community professionals who understand the challenges of writing a book? Then join my new community, Publishing for Leaders, where you can attend our Authors Brew Coffee Chat, get real support and advice from a professional writer and editor. Join our community of authors who are writing their book right alongside you. The link is in the show notes below. Now let's get back to the show.
All right, friends, we're back with the book blueprint episode, and Bob Martin, who is an author, who asked me a question about his historical fiction book. So, Bob, what other questions do you have for me today?
Well, you know, I think every author probably thinks that this is like the big bestseller that they've just written. But, you know, after writing a few other books and blogging for a few years now, I really do think this book has some potential. So a little bit about my publishing history. I wrote a fiction book, which I tried to publish in 2008. And I got to tell you, first, that was my first shot at it. And I didn't know anything about the publishing industry at all. And the sharks just ate me alive.
Ouch.
You know, all the consultants came in, and then you need this, you need that. And man, and so finally, I wound up self-publishing it. And then that I actually self-printed it. I printed a few thousand copies and sold it on the internet. That was, and then of course that kind of died down. Then I wrote my second book, and my second book is not fiction. It's a interfaith devotional, I would say, between Eastern and Western religion. And through a very strange set of circumstances, I actually got referral to a publisher, Innovative Inc., which is a subsidiary of Kendall Hunt, which is the largest textbook publisher in the country. And because I teach on a college campus, I came to know the textbook people. And they said, we have this niche company, this boutique company, and they would be interested in publishing a book. Turned out that it was a hybrid company, and for a small fee, and it certainly was not expensive at all, they did everything for me.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was wonderful. They did the book design, the title design, the internal graphic. They did a wonderful job. They got it out. They got it, you know, available in all the stores. They've got it in the publishing marketplace. They've done all that. But they have not had a big promotional budget. They haven't helped me much with promotion. And as you probably know, you could write the best book in the world, but if it's not promoted, if you don't get it out there, no one's going to see it. And so, it's, you know, it's sold a few thousand copies, but it's not going really anywhere. Now, if I wanted to take this book and go back to them, they would certainly accept it. And for a small price, I could have it. But I think this book deserves more potential. So I've been doing my homework and finding agents. So I guess my question is, how is a writer viewed when they've kind of gone this route? I went from self-publishing. Now, the other thing I will say is that once they accepted this book, and they did, they reviewed it and they decided that they would take it. It's not like you just get to say with a hybrid, you don't just get to say you will publish my book.
Right. Yeah.
So they accepted it. So then they asked to see the previous book, and then they took that on and published it. So now I'm in the process of saying, well, I could go back to them, but I would really like to go to a first-rate publisher this time.
I think
a traditional publisher, and because I think this has the potential. And this book is mainline. I mean, there is a genre of historical fiction readers. I mean, there is a market for this kind of book. My other books were kind of, you know, edgy. And so I think that this is marketable. And so I'd like to find an agent. So I'm in the process of finding my first, second, third, fourth tier group of agents and putting the query letters together. And I'm just wondering how to refer to my previous publishing. I mean, I certainly want to mention that I've completed a couple of books. I don't want to mislead and say,
like, the agent. I mean, you can tell an agent you had both of your other books were picked up by a hybrid publisher.
Yes, that's what I mean. Is that okay?
Yeah. Oh yeah,
absolutely. To say that.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, you can even say your previous books were self-published. That doesn't matter. What they're looking at is your current book. So it actually doesn't matter what you previously published or did, unless it's something that, like, you know, it doesn't have a good presence, or it's not the genre that they're going to do, or it's like something that, like, you know, completely goes against their whatever, their book publishing values. So yeah, that's fine. Like, you can say, yeah, I had these two books previously and they were picked up by a hybrid publisher.
Uh-huh. I can't say a traditional publisher, can I?
No. Don't lie about that. Yeah, because a traditional and hybrid publisher are two different things. Yep.
Okay, so that's good. So I know what to do with that part of the query letter. And it's an interesting process. I'm getting that done. And I guess the last question is something exciting just happened.
Okay.
So I've sent off 8 query letters. Mm-hmm. Now, and again, I mentioned that my second book was an Eastern Western religious, kind of like a rosary stone. A Rosetta Stone. It translates the two philosophies. So I just got a notice and an offer from one of the largest Chinese language publishers out of Hong Kong that they would like to translate my book and publish it, and they made me an offer.
This is your second book, the East West book. Okay, perfect.
The East West book.
Offer.
They made me an offer, which includes an advance and a percentage and a real honest to God offer.
I have a few questions for you. One is, did you read through the entire offer, like word for word?
I have.
Okay. The other thing I would do is I would find a literary lawyer and have them double check it, because a lot of times these agents, well, more publishing companies, but you'll have to just be really careful because they put wording in there that can, and you are a lawyer, so you know, they put wording in there that can, like, take away certain things that people don't notice or don't recognize. So just be careful. None of that type of wording is in there. What is your question about this specific agent? Because we only have a few more minutes left and I want to get this answer.
Okay. So my question is it appropriate? Can I now write a follow-up letter to the 8 agents that I've already queried? Mm-hmm. And tell them about this new development, although it doesn't have anything to do with this particular book that I'm querying about, but it does open me up image-wise as now an internationally published author.
I would say when you write the other agents, say you do have other agent interests, but you are looking at options with other agents and see what they can offer you. That's how I would.
No, I don't mean for that book. I mean for the current fiction book that I've written that I'm currently querying some people on. Can I write them and say, I just want to let you know, that I got this offer about a completely separate book, but that now to add to my resume and my marketability as an author and your decision about whether to accept me, that now I also have inroads into the Asian market.
The agent that wants to introduce you to the Asian market, is that for your, let me just be clear, historical fiction book, or that's for your second book?
That's for my second book. It's not an agent. It's the publisher.
Oh, okay. So you have another publisher that wants to come in and take your second book and publish it in the Asian market.
Right. Correct.
Okay. So the one thing you have to figure out is if that publisher has anything in conflict with the one you have now. That's what
they do not. They
okay,
do not.
Perfect. Okay, so if that doesn't, then it really doesn't matter, because the historical fiction is completely different. You can't say, like, oh, I've got another agent on this, but it's a completely different book. You can't use that as credibility. But what you can say is that you have agents inquire about your book. They haven't actually, you don't have an agreement with them. I would say if you do go through with the agreement, you can say, I have had an agent and publishing and hybrid publishers pick up my other two books. And for this book, I am looking for someone like an agent or a publisher, or whatever. So you can say it that way. It does give you some credibility, even though it's not the same genre and stuff. It does show that, like, you are a good writer and that someone is interested in your content. So yeah, in that form, I would say you can do that for sure.
as a follow-up letter to the ones I've already sent.
Yeah.
Okay, great. All right.
I would say you do that. Yeah. And not like obviously shove it in your face, but just say like, hey, by the way, be professional about it. I would say definitely do that.
So they won't be bothered or thinking that I'm bothering them by sending a follow-up letter to my query.
You have to follow up with agents because they are so busy and they get so many inquiries and stuff. Following, as long as you didn't like just email them 2 days ago, but give them a couple weeks. If it's been at least a couple weeks, I'd definitely follow up with them for sure.
Okay, great. Yeah. All right.
And congratulations. That's super exciting.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yes. Bob, this has been great. I love these questions you had for me today. I'm going to put up on here for the people watching on YouTube, your website. But for other people who are listening on audio, please tell them where they can find you and reach out to you and look, see the other two books that you have published.
Okay. It would be authorbobmartin.com.
Awesome. Sounds great. Perfect. Well, Bob, thank you so much for coming on today. This has been a blast. I loved answering those two questions for you. And for those of you who are listening, you can also do book coaching. Come on for a book blueprint episode. You can go to www.writeforyou.me and hit me up on my contact form to find out how you can be a book blueprint guest. You know, my friends, I do love working with authors to get past their mindset, writing, and publishing hurdles. And if you're not sure where to start, definitely come over to my website to find out more when you book a discovery call. Until next week, this is Lynn Aliquity reminding you to keep writing, keep dreaming, and keep creating. Your book is waiting to be born. Thanks for joining me today on the Self-Publishing for Professionals podcast. If you found the information on today's show valuable, be sure to subscribe and follow and get the next episode dropped as soon as it's published. This podcast is brought to you by Unicorn Publishing Company. The information in this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The content shared by the host, guests, and any affiliates is not intended to substitute for professional, legal, or financial advice or any professional advice specific to your situation. Always seek the advice of a qualified professional with any questions you may have. The opinions expressed on the show by the host or guests are those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect the views of Unicorn Publishing Company. Unicorn Publishing Company, the host, guests, and affiliates are not responsible or liable for any decisions made by listeners or actions taken hereto based on the information discussed in this podcast. By listening to this podcast, you acknowledge and agree to release Unicorn Publishing Company, the host, affiliates, and guests from any liability.